Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We have the match ahead of us, probably that I would want to have more than any other in the entire tournament. And I have to be honest, I didn't know at the start of the tournament that it's what I wanted. But now I do know. It's Serena Williams against Victoria Azarenka.
For a moment there, I thought you were talking about Dominic Thiem against Alex de Minaur, which is what's sort of quite literally ahead of us right now. That's about to get underway. And
well,
and
I'm quite excited about that.
Not that that might not be a great match, but I thought you were going a bit big, a bit early. But yes, I agree about Azarenka and Serena.
I didn't. Do you know what I mean, though? At the start of the tournament, was that in your mind as a matchup that you craved? I can't say it was for me because I really didn't think of that as a possibility. But now I'm sitting here and it's going to happen. And it feels like one of the biggest matches in tennis.
No, well, if you dangled it in front of me, I would have craved it. But I didn't see it dangling there. We were just talking about Azarenka and the fact that, we've just seen her win 6-1, 6-love over Elise Mertens, a very, very good player who beat the Australian Open champion in the previous round. And I need to do some reprocessing of how I view Victoria Azarenka because I've not, my mind, my tennis brain hasn't had a chance to catch up with what's happening because, yes, I watched her beat Joe Konter at the Western and Southern Open. I think that match and her loss to Venus Williams in Lexington are the only sort of two full tennis matches of hers that I've watched. And as impressive as she was against Konter, I still hadn't erased what happened in Lexington from my mind. And I still can't quite compute how that was only 3 weeks ago. But I need to start doing some quick computing and completely reordering the Azarenka compartments in my brain because she's playing world-beating tennis.
Well, at least you haven't gone on the record and said that Elise Mertens was going to beat her. Which,
well, Matt, I feel like after 2 years, you're finally one of us now.
I'd like to formally and publicly apologise for that terrible prediction.
One in love. I mean, not sure anyone would have predicted it was going to be one in love.
But it's the same thing. I hadn't processed quite how well Victoria Azarenka is playing and has been playing for the last few weeks because, you know, sometimes you can normalize things so quickly in your mind and sometimes it takes a while. And Azarenka for me is taking a while. There's so much that we've seen from her in the last few years where she hasn't been a force in the game at all. And it's looked like the game had moved on a little bit from what she was playing. Well, she is back and she is on an absolute mission in this tournament. And she is one of the four best players in this tournament, and they're all in the semi-finals, I would say. That's what makes this lineup so exciting. They're all playing the best tennis. It doesn't feel like anyone's got there through any kind of fluke at all. They're all, well, three of them certainly came in with very good form, Azarenka, Brady and Osaka, and Serena is Serena. And I agree with you, David, it's a very, very exciting matchup. And tomorrow night can't really come quick enough.
Just to put Victoria Azarenka into perspective, when we talk about her as being the past, and that's how I was viewing her until 2 weeks ago. That's the point. She plays Venus Williams in the first round in Lexington, and she got absolutely dismantled. And Venus was fabulous, but Victoria Azarenka looked like she had no power, no purpose, no spite in her anymore, no fangs, to use Mary Carrillo's wonderful term. And yet that is the term that I think sums up Azarenka versus, for instance, tonight, Elisa Mertens. What she brings to the table, there's a devil in the way she plays the sport, but she's been unable to make a comeback, a meaningful comeback in the last few years. We know the reasons why, in terms of when she gave birth to Leo and then she's had the custody battle, and she's struggled to sort of get back out on the tour in a meaningful way, and then she got loads and loads of really rough first round matches because her ranking was low, but it just felt like she was treading water. So if you remember back about 2 weeks ago in the Amazon Prime coverage, we had Daniela Hantikova saying, after one of her good wins, I think it was after the one over Konta, she said she's going to get back to the top of the game. I think she will get back to the top of the game. And honestly, I think Daniela is a really, really good pundit, and I really like listening to her. But I thought, I just do not see that. I don't see where that is going to come from. She's produced a couple of decent performances, but I thought that's gone. That level of form that she used to be able to produce is gone. That is not coming back. Well, this fortnight, she's produced it, and she looks like the player that Serena Williams played consecutive year finals three set classics against. She looks like that player, and that was against 2012 and 2013 Serena Williams. I mean, it's, how is she doing it?
Do you expect me to have an answer to that, David?
Yes, I do.
Well, she's just given, and actually she might have an answer for you herself, because she's just given a really, really sensational on-court interview. I don't say that very often, sensational on-court interview. I mean, Brad Gilbert 2 nights ago was asking Daniil Medvedev what he thought about the fact that he'd soiled his trousers.
With Tabasco sauce.
I mean, truly Twilight Zone stuff. Victoria Azarenka has just given a real cracker of an interview to Darren Cahill. You're laughing, but is that not an accurate transcript?
You're absolutely right. Brad had dropped Tabasco sauce over his own trousers, and he wanted to ask Daniil Medvedev's opinion about it.
So confused.
He ended up sort of asking him whether he liked Tabasco sauce, as if that were.
He tried to do a really weird segue into it, like. He did that classic thing, you've played so well, you've won so quickly, do you have dinner reservations? And speaking of dinner and food, I spilled hot sauce down my pants.
But actually, Darren Cahill's interview tonight, I mean, he's good at those. Mm. The thing with Victoria Azarenka, though, her demeanour, her disposition, wow, she looked so relaxed and happy to be out there, and as though she was playing with no pressure. I know she'd just won 6-6, 6-love, 6-1 or whatever, so it's easier to look like that when you've done that. But my brief dealings with her a few years ago, I really liked her. She got a great sense of humour, dry sense of humour. She was cheeky, mischievous. She was taking the mick out of everybody. It was great fun at Queen's when she did the charity match Rally for Bali. But this is a sunny disposition that she's got, which just makes you feel like she's just not worried about it too much. You know, she's pumped to be doing it. She desperately wants to win. She's an incredible competitor, just like she always was. But she's enjoying it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, sunny disposition, relaxed, happy, but also incredibly intense. And that is something that's really struck me about, maybe with the slight exception of Jennifer Brady, who's kind of this like total even keel the whole time. Apparently she keeps on saying in press, I'm so nervous during and before these matches. And I'm looking at her thinking, well, you don't look nervous at all. You've got a fantastic poker face. But anyway, with the possible exception of Jennifer Brady, that's something that so struck me about the three other semi-finalists. They're the ones whose matches are the ones where I least notice the lack of crowd, because I'm so absorbed by the intensity of it that I find myself not noticing that intensity creates atmosphere. And I think Azarenka is doing that. She's got that really, how would you describe her walk? It's almost a little bit of an awkward walk. It's like her head sort of bobbing ahead of her. I don't know, there's something very intentful, purposeful about her walk, and she's got that back. So yeah, she's striking this incredible balance of having taken the pressure off her shoulders, in terms of needing to win, but also really, really wanting to win still, because it's fun. Why wouldn't I want to do more of this? And did I hear right that she said in that interview to Darren Cahill that she's never really enjoyed tennis before now?
Yeah, yeah. And I love the way she delivered that line, because he didn't quite hear her when she first said it. And then she repeated it to make sure he'd heard it, because she really wanted to just tell that story. You know, she just said, you know, I don't think I've ever really enjoyed tennis, because I was so hyped up and desperate to win and prove myself and do all these things. And I really get that, because when you think back, she used to get in trouble all the time for slightly saying an awkward thing in a press conference, or being when she went off the court in that match against Sloane Stephens at the Australian Open, and she admitted afterwards she was sort of having a panic attack. And I think she was, people were struggling to relate to her and get to know her and really appreciate her. And she's come through all that. And I think it's just maturity. I mean, she's 31. She's just not worried about all the things she used to be worried about, because she's already proved herself. She's got 30 million in prize money that she's earned. She's got Grand Slam. She's former world number one. I mean, I asked her that question in that press conference 2 weeks ago. Did you consider retiring recently? And she said she did at the start of this year. She was really thinking seriously about retiring. And then she thought she'd give it one more go and just see how it went. But it was clearly without any pressure of, I have to. If I can, I want to. I just think she's a joy to watch. I also love the way nobody goes down the lines better than she does. Attacks people down the lines, because it's not just brute power, is it? She played Arina Sabalenka, who's just teeing off on the ball, but Azarenka is just carving people apart by this precision approach of down that line, right now down this line. And how do you stop that?
She's going to get Serena on the move in a way that I'm not sure anybody quite has yet, that effectively Peronkova did today in patches, but that side to side relentlessly, I think, is going to be a physical challenge for Serena that is beyond what she's faced yet. And I'm not saying she's not up to it. I just think it's going to be a test, and I don't know whether she'll pass it, but it's certainly, oh, I can't wait to party like it's 2012 again. Feel like when I got the London Olympics DVDs out. Good times.
Yeah. Actually, she was saying in that interview just now as well that she'd been there was a hitting partner, I think a male hitting partner, that she'd been practicing with, and she was really clearly absolutely pumped about the fact that she'd got to certain balls that she wasn't getting to a while back. and just enjoying that process. As regards to Serena, I actually think that maybe Poronkova might not be the worst player to have played just before, because she did go a set down. She's got these flat ground strokes. I thought she was really hitting the ball very effectively, was Poronkova. And Serena just dug that win out, and then started to just ramp up the power as the match went along. I think it ended up being a really good win for her.
Yeah, she's an underrated problem solver, I think, Serena Williams. I think sometimes there's a narrative around her that she just wins because she's better than everyone, and often that has been the case. But certainly this tournament, the way she's figured out matches and figured out opponents, and she needed to do that against Poronkova, because Poronkova in that first set was, as you said, taking the ball on with her backhand down the line, throwing in the slice forehands.
I love the Poronkova backhand down the line.
Yeah, it's a joy. And she plays with such deception and disguise, I think. And Serena was occasionally caught a little bit flat-footed. I can think of two instances where she was brought into the net and Poronkova just lobbed her and Serena just stood there, you know, because she couldn't really see the shot that was coming. But then I thought she really started to dominate Poronkova's second serve. That was one of the big shifts in the match. And she really started to nail some returns and, yeah, just kind of impose her game a little bit more and figured out how to do that. And she served beautifully throughout the match. I think she hit 20 aces altogether. And that is still the cornerstone of her game. I think if she serves well, it keeps her in matches until she perhaps finds her rhythm off the ground a little bit. But I agree with you. I think Azarenka, having seen what I've just seen, I think she's playing better than Serena. And we know that she's going to relish that challenge. I mean, she said it's going to be fun for me. It's going to be good for me to play Serena. And she will rise to that occasion, I think.
Their last match, by the way, was 2019. And I've just read a little bit of the build-up to that match. And Azarenka was incredibly pumped ahead of it, just excited. And we've just seen that again just now. She's getting off on the fact that she's playing Serena as much as we are.
Yeah, that was the other thing that really struck me about that Darren Cahill interview just now. It's probably the first time I can remember really believing a player when they say, I'm really genuinely excited about facing, you know, the toughest possible opponent that I could face in the next round. I'm more excited about this than I would be about facing the world number 500 for a place in a Grand Slam final. Because I always think, yeah, I mean, obviously you'd rather face, you know, my dad than you would Serena Williams. Sorry, Dad. But she genuinely wanted that match. She wanted the toughest possible task. She wanted to play a great champion. She wanted the moment and the occasion and the challenge. And she wanted it, I don't know if this sounds strange to say for such a great competitor, but she wanted it more than she wants the win. And that really struck me.
Yeah, it's almost like she wanted to have her own tennis relived and just sort of, you know, enjoy the old times.
Yeah, we all want to enjoy the old times. The old times were better.
Yeah, Serena, I think, very much enjoys playing her as well. I think she relishes that rivalry. Even though when you actually look at the rivalry, it's 18-4 in favour of Serena Williams. But there are so many close matches. I mean, in their last five matches, three of them went the distance, won by Serena. But, you know, they've had some classics.
And so many of those classics and a number of Azarenka's victories were during that 2012-2013 period when Serena was just sublime. And Azarenka was the only person that could challenge her. She really was. I really think that Serena has a huge respect for Victoria Azarenka because of the rivalry that they had during that specific period. I think it's enhanced now because they share the both being mothers. I think that is so significant for both of them that they sort of, I don't think they're friends, but I do think they share an understanding and a bond on an unspoken level there.
Yeah. There's an appreciation, I think.
I think Serena really respects her.
Incidentally, the rivalry you mentioned in 2013, there was that spell of matches that they played where they played each other in Doha, and it was 6-3 in the third for Azarenka. Then they played in Rome, Serena won. In Cincinnati, Azarenka won. This was the big one. Cincinnati, Azarenka won 7-6 with an 8-6 tiebreak in the third. Ooh. And then 2 weeks later, they played each other in the US Open finals. So they played in back-to-back hard court summer finals. And that one was 7-5, 6-7, 6-1. It ended up being a one-sided final set. But look how close it was between the two of them, you know. And let's hope they both can bring their best stuff, because we need this. We need this.
That was the last time Azarenka was at this stage of a slam, that 2013 US Open, just an illustration of how long it's been to get back to this level. And I think their 2012 wow. US Open final was the one that went deep in the third set. If memory serves, that was 7-5 Serena in the third. You know, they were, as you said, they were back-to-back classics. And Serena never had her hands as full as when she was playing Azarenka in that period. It was the rivalry after the one she'd had with Enan, I suppose. It was kind of the next one, but it was so different because Enan used to play Serena very differently, whereas Azarenka used to go toe-to-toe with her as much as she could from the baseline, as you said, using those down-the-line shots. And it was just, she was able to harm Serena in ways that no one else could. And yeah, I'm, as I said, bring it on.
Can I just relate a line from Christopher Clary, our good friend from the New York Times, who said that in that first set, Svetlana Peronkova had more rhythm changes than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out a slice forehand has been the key to getting the better of Serena Williams all this time, for a set anyway. Because, as Matt pointed out, she did a fantastic job of problem solving that slice forehand. And actually, by the end of the match, Peronkova was barely using it, whereas in the first set, it was very fruitful for her. I loved the first set, and there were a couple of Peronkova paddled backhands down the line, which I know it's weird technique. You know, she was taught when she was a kid by her dad, who didn't really know anything about tennis. He was sort of making it up as he went along. So she's got this really unorthodox technique, but just is so effective. And I feel it does things to me, her backhand down the line. I could just watch it on a loop.
Is it not a little bit like Medvedev's when you think of...
Yeah, incredibly flat and sort of looks like that. I mean, I'm borrowing some technical analysis from the pundits that I spend my days with here, but looks like they're catching it late. There's something sort of a bit disconcerting about it, but also mesmerizing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Talking to Medvedev, he followed this match onto the court and played against Andrei Rublev. And previous to this encounter, they'd played twice on the tour and Medvedev had won both of them without losing a set. They're good mates, and you could tell that when they came out onto the court, and suddenly Rublev is 6-3 up in the first set tiebreak. And it looked on. It looked on for him at that point, certainly to get his first set against him. And there'd been a couple of dodgy games from Medvedev where he just was missing and he was missing in the tiebreak as well. And then suddenly he just battened down the hatches at 3-6 down. He just made it very clear, I am not going to miss, and let's see what you can do. And poor old Andre kind of self-destructed.
Who does that remind you of in a tiebreak? I was expecting a better response to that.
Well, Borna Čoric, Denis Shapovalov.
Well, I was going Djokovic with the battening down the hatches and not making an error in the tiebreak.
Sorry, I was...
Was not the answer I was expecting.
I was thinking the opposite of blowing a tiebreak lead.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
No. Well, that went well. Over to
we
you,
got there
Matt.
In the end.
Yeah. We've forgotten about Novak Djokovic that quickly, have we? We will have raised him from our consciousness. Crikey.
You are right, though. And Andrei Rublev, who wants to win tennis matches so much that he just can't handle it when he doesn't. And he lost it. And he took it out on various things, including his racket bag, his coach, and his banana. Which is not something...
I loved it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Banana abuse is the new thing, kids.
I've never seen that before. I've never seen anybody thrash a fruit item onto the floor.
It was still in the skin. He took a bite from it first and then just, oh, he just...
Then he had to wander over to the bin.
Slapped it down. Because nobody's allowed to.
No one's allowed to
pick
it up.
Do you think in non-COVID times he would really have sat there and allowed someone else to clear up his banana debris after his childish banana strop?
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think lots of players would, but I think Rublev might not. To be fair,
I think he's a good lad.
Yeah,
he was.
But my word, does he have a temper on him?
And he was caught out by James Kyothavong's knowledge of Russian swear words in a very amusing incident, because he screamed what sounded like a kind of ah very loudly. And got a verbal obscenity warning and then proceeded to argue about it with James Kyothavong, who said, well, I'm pretty sure I heard something else, but, you know, the tape will be reviewed and they will see whether or not to fine you for it. And then after that, he didn't really argue it again, because I think he realised that James had caught him out.
Yeah, well, and you found out from your pundits, Catherine, that chair umpires actually study swear words in other languages, which I think is magnificent.
Yes, I was being told in my ear to hold up the Medvedev chat because Medvedev was coming to speak to us in the virtual interview room, but we weren't quite sure when we were arriving. So we'd sort of done all the, you know, analysis of the match and flogged the Medvedev chat to death. But I was being told, oh, he'll be here any minute. Just keep it going. And I'd already asked the producers to have the sort of Rublev. Well, I'd asked for the banana clip to be on standby, but they'd created a sort of roll of Rublev meltdown material, which was glorious. And I just tossed out there. Oh, you know, is that a thing? Do umpires revise foreign swear words? And Daniela's eyes lit up and said, they blooming well do. She said, I got caught out by that loads of times. She said she would always make a mental note of who the umpire was before the match and what languages they could speak and sort of decide upon the language of her swear words accordingly. And Tim sat there silently throughout this, you know, looking like butter wouldn't melt, Tim Henman that's never sworn in his life.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We know him a bit better than that. Right. Can I just say, by the way, that at the moment, I've just seen Alex Diminor set up a fourth break point on Dominic Thiem's serve. Thiem's 3-1 up, and Diminor has taken to half-volleying any ground stroke that Thiem hits at him. And he's like standing almost in the service box in order to just try and smother him and attack him, which I was not expecting at all. Very entertaining. So whether it pays off and actually does him any good, well, that's another matter. What was Daniil Medvedev like to talk to?
Really pleasant. I've always found him a really engaging interviewee. I know he's not a perfect person. He's got a troubling rap sheet. We've dealt with this before. I believe him when he says he's trying to improve as a person. I think we see evidence of that. And he's intelligent. You feel like he's looking you in the eye and thinking about your question. I'm pleased to report that although there's no crowds with whom he can get involved in epic, iconic moments this year, he really did still seem like himself. There was a twinkle in his eye. He didn't gloss over any questions. Tim asked him about how he was missing the New York crowd, and he gave a really wry little answer, you know, about you know, just a bit of irony about, oh, but the New York crowd love me. What are you talking about?
Didn't he call it a love story?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the first question I asked him was, how are you feeling, you know, not just emotionally, but physically as well? Because he dodged a bullet in that third set tiebreak, or rather...
He looked in a bad way, didn't he?
Rublev removed the bullet from his path by imploding. I said, yeah, so how are you feeling? He said, oh, I'm really drained right now. He did look at, if he had lost that third set tiebreak, he would have been in trouble for sure. It was,
yeah, because he'd had treatment to a shoulder at 4-5 when he came out, and then he had somebody come on the next changeover to rub his legs because he got cramp, and he just didn't look too well.
He was taking on loads of water. He went really pale. I mean, I know that he's been winning so easily this tournament that he just hasn't really been challenged at all. And okay, this was a straight sets match, but I suppose it was a bit more competitive than any of his previous matches have been. So maybe that was a factor. Maybe stress and pressure made him feel it physically a bit more. But I did find it bizarre, this guy that, you know, last year at the US Open, he was held, various body parts were held together by sticky tape. And yet he was still this marathon man, wasn't he, over the distance. Endurance-wise, there was no question mark over him. But it was a little bit odd what happened to him physically in that third set, I think.
But last year, at times, he did look like he was done physically and yet still managed to come through it. It wasn't just... I didn't think it was just the fact that he was being held together. Like at times he was physically cramping on the court and suddenly he was he would have some sort of incredible second wind and come through matches that he looked down and out of. But I agree, this looks slightly different just in terms of how pale he went, and he looked, well, he did look injured, but he also just looked a bit unwell on the court for a small period of that match, and he celebrated at the end, which, I mean, his trademark is to not celebrate.
And he kept on referencing that. He mentioned it on the court and he mentioned it in his interview with us as well. He said, that's the first time I've celebrated a win since last year.
Yeah.
It was obviously really significant to him.
The moment you referenced his cramping of last year, all that I could think of was, I want you to know when you sleep at night
that
I won
so
because
great.
Of you.
It will never get old.
Catherine made Amazon Prime put out a VT of that without any reference points whatsoever. She just wanted to have a look.
Yeah, true story. Yeah, I made them run about a minute and a half of footage of Serena Williams arriving with her little dog poking out of her bag today. I mean, it was obviously very editorially relevant because we were talking about the fact that Serena's the first one on site every day, first one on the practice court. But, you know, tangentially, there was also fantastic dog footage.
That is interesting, isn't it? What an early riser she appears to be. I mean, she is on those practice courts really early.
Yep, first one there. I think they don't open them before 9 a.m. I think 9 a.m. is the earliest you can be out there, and she is there. I've been in the studio overlooking that practice court 2 years, and the two years previous to this one, and this year I'm obviously in London, but we get the footage every morning from the practice courts, and she has been there 9 a.m. every day, match day, practice day, no matter. What's going on? She is there with a man applying sunscreen to her and a dog poking out of her handbag and Patrick Mouratoglou looking stressed. She is there and it's extraordinary.
Well, it makes it very interesting about tomorrow then, doesn't it? When does she practice? Because she is the second match on against Victoria Azarenka. The first match is at 7 p.m. local time in New York. And so she won't get on court probably till 9 o'clock at night.
Well, last year in this same situation, she practiced as she would at 9 a.m. and then she came back and had a short practice, more just a hit, a warm-up hit, around about, I think if I remember right, about 5 p.m. And she was the first of the semi-finals on court.
I was following up on what we talked about yesterday in terms of why we thought she might have been requesting the day session matches, and it's irrelevant now because the schedule is set for the remaining matches of the tournament. But I had a vague memory once we'd discussed it of hearing her talk about this before, and I think as much as the conditions, I think the main thing is for her routine, because I think she's talked about when she plays a night session match, her next day is not an off day because everything's pushed back so much, and she doesn't feel like she can stick to that usual routine quite as well or quite as easily. And I think also having Olympia with her, I think she would rather play during the day and then get back and be with her in the evening. She's talked about that as well. I was looking back at some transcripts that she's given in the last year. And so I think her routine is very important to her. And this having to go to a night session could be a little bit of a disruption to that. But at the same time, obviously, she is incredibly experienced, and I expect her to deal with that fine. But it's certainly interesting when you've been requesting it, as she, I think, clearly has. That does show that there is something in that, and something that you think is to your advantage.
Who's going to win?
Naomi Osaka.
Okay, Naomi Osaka over Brady.
Yes.
They're blooming good semi-finals, aren't they?
They really are
really good.
Yeah. They're the four best players in the tournament. So I think it's as simple as that. Yeah, Osaka.
Who is going to win out of Azarenka and Serena?
Azarenka.
He does good Azarenka predictions.
Yeah, that's a guaranteed win for Serena.
If you'd asked me this last night, if you'd said Serena and Azarenka will play in that semi-final, I'd have said Serena. But one in love over Elise Mertens. Yikes. Go on, David. What you go.
Serena.
Serena.
Serena. There are 20 aces. 20 aces is a big deal. And 18-4 head-to-head. And Serena.
Okay. David said it with more conviction, Matt. So I'm going with that.
I think it could be an absolute corker, though. Mm. I really do. I'd be disappointed if not. If Brady comes out and plays well, I think the other one will be an absolute belter as well. It's one of those, you know. I think it's all on Brady, whether she can play and handle the occasion. And I think no crowd helps with that for her.
She said after her win yesterday, was it yesterday? Feels like a lifetime ago. Who did she beat yesterday?
Putin Saver.
She said, I was so nervous, I thought I was going to poop my pants.
Yes.
She really does disguise it well. I mean, there's the odd moment where she looks a bit wobbly, but crikey. She doesn't look like somebody that's at risk of soiling themselves.
I would love to look as nervous as her, if that's nervous. So, yeah. Wow. I think Osaka as well, experience. And you mentioned it earlier about how players who look like they're playing without pressure. I'm not saying that Osaka is playing without pressure, but she's carrying the I've never seen her look happier in herself and more content as who she is than she does now. So I think that will help her play good tennis every time she steps out. So,
I really, for the sake of my pre-tournament predictions, it is essential for my credibility that Osaka wins. Like, essential. That's really all I've got. Yep.
We long since lost any credibility, Catherine. When it comes to predictions, you know that. No, but there's a micro level of credibility that we want to reestablish, if at all possible. Just one other result to give to you, which I was watching out the corner of my eye, was the women's doubles semi-final between Nicole, is it Melichar?
Melichar, I think.
Melichar and Zhu Yifan. From China, and they defeated Asia Muhammad and Taylor Townsend. And it was absolutely belting match. It was 9-7 in the third set tiebreak. And it was one of those where, because it was on at the same time as our commentary, I'm not supposed to be watching it, but I just kept finding myself looking over at the screen and getting invested in it. So they're into the women's doubles final. And tomorrow, it all starts, the men's doubles final is the first thing on, and that's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, New York time, so 8 p.m. in the UK. Mate Pavic and Bruno Suarez against Wesley Kulhoff and Nikola Mektic of Croatia. And then those singles matches in the evening session from 7 o'clock, Brady Osaka, then Williams against Azarenka. And also the wheelchair competition starts tomorrow. From a British perspective, we've got Jordan Wiley playing. We have got Gordon Reid against Alfie Hewitt. Andy Lapthorne is in action as well, and Lucy Shuker as well. So there's more tennis to look at. I mean, that's one of the slightly weird things, because there's no mixed doubles and there's no junior event. The second week does feel fairly quiet, but there's more going on tomorrow. So as we stand, Dominic Thiem has just won the first set 6-1, as we finish the podcast here at 2:36 in the morning. 40-minute set, absolutely fascinating. I've been watching it out of the corner of my eye while we were speaking. It feels like a really close set. When you watch Dimonor, the speed that he's running at, he's kind of cutting off angles in order so that he can try and half volley and attack team. And he set up 4 or 5 breakpoints in a single game, and he was looking good, and he's lost it 6-1. I mean, that's just rude, Dominic. So, what time are you up in the morning, Catherine? You don't have to get up in the morning,
There's
do you?
There's no such thing as the morning for me tomorrow. Call time, 7:30 p.m. It's like Christmas.
Oh, my word. What are you going to do with your day?
Sleep. Sleep. Wake up. Do you like a thing so I can say I did something with my day, and then nap?
Catherine Whittaker there, everybody. Matt, what time did you go to bed this morning?
Well, it was gone 7 a.m.
He went to bed at 7 a.m.
Yeah,
folks.
It was a struggle.
Nobody
today
told either of you you had to watch all of Denis Shapovalov against Pablo Carreño Busta.
We should review that quickly.
To be fair, I was still working on the podcast until about 6 a.m. So it was only an extra hour.
Well, now I feel bad.
Oh, no. We were both there, Catherine. We were both plugging away, making sure that the listeners got what they want from us. And sure enough, they did. Pablo Carreño Busta wins sets 2 and 3. He's a set down. He wins sets 2 and 3 on tie breaks. Really, Shapovalov should have won one of those. And at 2-1, I am genuinely thinking, okay, that's my cue to go to bed. And then Shapovalov goes 3-love up in about 4 minutes in the fourth set. And I've been dragged in. And then Shapovalov wins that set in about 18 minutes, 6-love. And he genuinely seemed to believe that that meant he was going to win the match and that Pablo Carreño Busta had given it up.
Yeah, very strange quotes after the match saying, oh, I was really surprised that he was any good in the fifth set because he'd been rubbish in the fourth set.
Came out firing.
Like, yeah. Breaking news, Denis Shapovalov has never watched a 5-set tennis match. I mean, come on, that is naive, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Disappointing. Not for Pablo, though.
No, well, he was fantastic, Carreño Busta. I mean, there were some rallies when, because you know how jaw-dropping Shapovalov can be, and when he's going side-to-side and he's full-fledged teeing off from ridiculous positions on the court, and he was dominating rallies. But then Carreño Busta on the run with his forehand is an extraordinary sight at times.
I think he's probably one of those guys, Carreño Busta, who, with the exception of Kyrgios, who has definitely said some regrettable things about him, I bet he has the respect of the locker room.
What is Kyrgios said about Pablo Carreño Busta?
I think he's generally said that he sort of fluked his way to the US Open semi-final in the past.
Oh, he said it recently.
Oh yeah, and that he only got to the ATP finals as an alternate because of his results on clay, which is a real misunderstanding of actually what Carreño Busta is as a tennis player, because he's actually a much better hard court player than he is clay court player. But I just feel like for most people in that locker room, they probably know that he is tough to beat, and he, you know, you really have to go out and beat him, was what Tim Henman was saying on your coverage today. You know, he's not going to beat himself, whereas Shapovalov can still. He still has that
and probably
issue.
Did.
Yeah, whereas Carreño Busta was, as you said, David, incredibly, incredibly solid, and occasionally came up with some very impressive shot making of his own.
That's what struck me, is his ability to counter attack when he's being pushed around, and suddenly give you one back, you know, and win a point off a whiplash forehand or a good cross court backhand. So no, fair play to him. I was disappointed because I do love watching Shapovalov play, and I'm waiting for that breakthrough, and this was a real chance for it to get through to play Alexander Zverev, which is the other semi-final now on Friday. So it'll be Zverev against Karina Buster. It'll be Daniil Medvedev against either Thiem or Dimonor. We'll talk about those matches tomorrow as well after the semi-finals of the women's tournament, which they couldn't really be better on paper. They look fantastic. So look forward to that. Go and sleep up, Catherine. Enjoy your three naps tomorrow and your pretend activity. We'll hear all about that tomorrow, whatever it was. Maybe she'll go to the fridge, folks. Who knows?
I'll definitely be going to the fridge. Yeah.
Yes. And yeah, thanks ever so much for listening and for your support and for
Zeus
leaving us. Zeus, thank you to Nicholas, isn't it? Nicholas is the owner of Zeus. Thank you, Nicholas, for bringing Zeus into our lives.
Yes.
That's said, isn't it?
He's always top of mind. David gives me that. I knew you were going to mention Zeus. Look.
I'm quite relieved you did. Not that I'd forgotten you, Zeus. It's just, you know, I need Catherine just to make me really bring it in a way that it needs to be said, that Zeus is the dog.
Dog reminders is something I'm here for always. Yeah. Always got you.
Splendid. All right. Okay. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.